Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout each month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, and she alternates weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I'll continue to be the host for this fun discussion show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesday features none other than Selena Fox with Nature Spirituality. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursday for Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, and we hope you try them all. October is Clergy Appreciation Month. Tonight, we're going to be talking with two Circle Sanctuary ministers who are also pagan clergy, hospital chaplains in their mundane life. Kerwin, or Kern Green, is an ordained Circle Sanctuary minister and a board-certified chaplain working at a hospital in Indiana. He has a Master's of Divinity degree and has been a professional hospital chaplain for 20 years. Kern is the first openly pagan chaplain to belong to the Association of Professional Chaplains. He is a former priest of the Thaya Coven of Indianapolis, which was also founded by the members of the Pagan Pride Project International. Kern plays guitar and Native American flute and is half of the music duo, The Green Man and the Muse, with his wife, Anon. He also has a love for languages, enjoy reading the Homeric hymns and classic Greek. Reverend Charlotte Bear is also joining us tonight. Before becoming clergy, Char was a professional actress and broadcast journalist. She's a U.S. veteran and was a combat TV journalist. Char has been in ministry over 21 years, with 12 years as a faith community leader, with 11-plus years as a healthcare chaplain. She's an environmental activist trained in Al Gore's program. I was proud to attend her ordination as a Circle Sanctuary minister last year. I'd like to welcome both of them. Let's give Reverend Kern and Reverend Char a warm welcome to Circle Talk. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi there. Thanks,
Deb. Good to be here.
Hey.
Hi, Kern.
So before we were on air, Kern and I were talking, and I asked, is this Clergy Appreciation Month or is it Chaplain Appreciation Month? And he's going to explain it to us. So take it away, Kern.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, it is actually Clergy Appreciation Month. October is every year. But that really got started, back in the 90s, early 90s. And before that, the forerunner and continuing to be present with us is Spiritual Care Week, which is the last week in October of every year. It actually started as Pastoral Care Week for chaplains, and that was back in October of 1985. It was led by the National Chaplaincy Group, COMIS, which is the Congress on Ministries and Specialized Settings, which would be chaplains, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Circle Sanctuary has been involved with COMIS, about 7 years now, maybe eight. And Selena Fox is one of the board members of that committee. So I think she could explain that a little better, what her role is. The Spiritual Care Week was started out as a week to highlight chaplaincy and explain what chaplains do, not just chaplains, but pastoral care counselors, educators, providers, to share the story of what chaplaincy is all about and their various ministries. And the first year, back in 1985, the theme was excellence in pastoral care. And as I've said, Pastoral Care Week became Spiritual Care Week, so it could embrace chaplains of other religious traditions beyond the Christian. And this year's theme for Spiritual Care Week is Advancing Spiritual Care Through Research, and we can talk a little more later about that. But later in 1992, the Spiritual Care Week inspired the Clergy Appreciation Day, which is the second Sunday of October, and that was extended to the whole month of October, so now there's Clergy Appreciation Month in October. And since many pagans consider themselves as clergy, I just want to say Clergy Appreciation Month to all of you. And I also want to say Happy Spiritual Care Week coming up at the end of this month to all chaplains.
Great. So what would you both say, what is the difference between clergy and chaplain for our listeners?
Can I take a swack at that, Kern?
Go ahead. Please, Char.
Sure. And in fact, Kern and I have put together a class, which will be in the MTP curriculum minister training program, about an overview of professional chaplaincy. So chaplain is a term that gets thrown around a lot, for sure. And it really, I mean, everybody's ordained. But there's a difference between being a faith community leader to the faith community that ordained you, sort of like caring for members of that community. And then a chaplain is someone who's working for a secular institution or industry beyond your own faith community. And there are volunteer chaplains, although increasingly chaplain is sort of becoming a professional designation, not to slight anybody else, but to elevate the role of spiritual care professionals within those institutions.
So, as you said, a chaplain just doesn't work with his own or her own faith group. They meet with anyone. So if you are a chaplain in a hospital and you're not Christian and you're Muslim, and you have a Christian, Muslim, or Buddhist patient, you still talk with them and work with them, correct?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the big things we really teach you about in CPE, is working outside of your own faith tradition. Sorry, Kern.
Oh, yeah, exactly. CPE, or clinical pastoral education, which is part of the professional chaplain training, teaches you to be able to listen and assess and understand where someone's coming from that has maybe a different faith tradition, and help them find the inner resources spiritually that they have, or connect them with outer resources that they need. Chaplains are there for everyone. Like a military chaplain is probably one of the best known roles of what chaplains do. And no matter what tradition that chaplain is, they are there for everyone. No matter what faith, or if they have no faith, they're there for everyone that they are to minister to.
Yeah, the field has been changing that way too. I just want to interject, Deb, because the mid to late 20th century model of chaplaincy very much was much more religious based.
Right,
and so even like
Christian
the Department of Veteran Affairs today might, and some hospitals, for example, or institutions might still do staffing models based on religious demographics. Almost always you're going to see a lot of full-time Catholic or Protestant chaplains, and then you might have like a part-time Buddhist, you might have a part-time Jewish, you know, they might have just volunteer, you know what I mean? So, but things have been changing dramatically within the professional chaplaincy field now to support interreligious, interfaith competency. We're expected, no matter what our own tradition is, to be like cultural experts, communication experts. In addition to providing spiritual care, you know, we're involved in a lot of cross-cultural work as advocates and allies of the people that we serve as well. So the whole field of chaplaincy has shifted its orientation more around the context you're serving in, but serving people of all faith or no faith.
Yeah,
that makes a good point about no faith. I hadn't even considered that.
Yeah, that's one of the growing fields in the surveys that have been done of Americans asking what is your religious or spiritual belief, and a good chunk of people, over 20%, now say they are of no faith or of no particular religious tradition. So they may be spiritual or not spiritual at all, but that is a growing segment of America, and chaplains are trained and equipped to talk with folks of no faith as well.
Yeah, because spirituality, more broadly defined, it's here in chaplaincy, it's a little different. So, like, I love the idea of spiritual care and spiritual care week, because anyone working in any setting that's really focused in on supporting other people's authentic spirituality is doing spiritual care. And like Kern was just alluding to, you know, the Gallup poll in early April this year was pointing out that for the first time ever, the U.S. Census was showing that more people in America now identify as spiritual but not religious, meaning they don't identify with only one religious tradition. They might have multiple ones that they refer to, or they don't have any, you know. And so, and I know I've got like 92 active clients right now. Over 50% are in that category. And so their spirituality is really about connecting to their innermost authentic truth, and also connecting to what we call the transcendent, those relationships beyond themselves that are sources of joy and meaning and purpose and comfort and resilience. And, you know, they consider those relationships sacred. So it's really deep. I know in healthcare, kind of thought of as behavioral health work, that very much complements mental health and the medical work done. So, yeah.
What are some, I know there's different types of chaplain. What are some types of things that chaplains, what are some of the duties they would perform, or what are their responsibilities?
Well, in general, a chaplain does spiritual and emotional support for patients, spiritual and or emotional support. So that can cover quite a bit. A typical visit I might do at the hospital would be sitting down, asking a patient how they're doing, and finding out, you know, exactly what's going on with them. I don't come in with my own agenda to say, you know, we're going to have this kind of prayer and we're going to do this and that. I listen to the patient and find out what they need. If they're Native American and they ask for sweet grass, I can get them some sweet grass. I can't light it for them, but I can give it to them, you know. And if they're Christian, you know, I can give them a Bible if that's what they need or want. It really depends on what's going on with the patient. A lot of times their needs are like relational with their family, an illness can really bring out the best in people and sometimes the worst in people as far as family goes. And so to kind of talk to them about their issues and give them emotional support and encouragement and then see how the spiritual side of them is needing support. So it could be a prayer, it could be some kind of ritual, and it could be no prayer at all. I think in the old days, they just expected a chaplain to go in and pray with the patient and move on to the next patient. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's more focused. Chaplains are more focused on listening and giving emotional and spiritual support. So that's kind of a very generalized visit that I would give. Maybe a quarter of the time, things are pretty dire, and it may be more trauma support, just mm-hmm. trying to get families together and mm-hmm. helping identify a patient. And sometimes it's a patient that's died, and I'm there to give grief support to the family and help them with whatever grief rituals they have. So those are some of the things that I do. I know Charlotte does a lot of other things, too.
Yeah,
you go ahead.
Yeah,
what
do you have to add, Charlotte?
Yeah, well, and here context is everything. It's kind of like being an emergency room doctor is very different than being a doctor in a prison.
Right, absolutely.
Being a pediatric nurse is very different than being a palliative care nurse, you know. So Kern
absolutely.
is, as I listen to him, I'm hearing, you know, a hospital chaplain doing rounds.
Right.
And encountering, you know, what's presenting on the floor. In the context I'm working in, I do a lot of work with oncology, with outpatient palliative care. So I see people in an infusion center. I'm doing a lot of group facilitation. I end up doing a lot of related education, including therapeutic spiritual care for cancer survivors, you know. I end up doing a lot of advocacy as well. And this is really important whether you're in a prison or in the military or in an academic institution or a healthcare institution where chaplains are hired, mm-hmm. is that, you know, you'll have clients or staff who have different gender identities, who are of a minority mm-hmm. culture, who have, you know, hearing or sensory challenges, who feel, you know, very marginalized, who have cognitive problems. And so a lot of what I'll do on an assessment is understanding somebody's worldview, their beliefs, their values. What are things that influence the decision making that they're going to be making, as well as their relationships and the spiritual resources that assist their healing. And I can help to be an advocate for them with the rest of the team, with that institution, to ensure that they're treated equitably and with humanity. So, and that also works with staff too, because chaplains are often frontline workers in doing staff support. And I know in the mm-hmm. last pandemic time frame, you don't hear a lot about chaplains behind the scene, but we're the people either, if not on the front lines, behind the front lines, supporting the frontline people.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
So all kinds of skill sets that require all that education, you know.
Absolutely. It's funny. You bring up COVID, and it's funny. One of the things that I've seen is also working in the healthcare field in my mundane life, is that I've seen chaplaincy in a hospital or medical setting gone to an afterthought to now actually part of the healthcare team. So as mm-hmm. spirituality is simply considered another need as emotional and physical needs are. So I think that's a vast improvement from maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah, we actually have the hospice movement to thank for that. It's Dame Cicely Saunders, you know, sort of championing, mm-hmm. being a champion for the total pain model, understanding, and we all can identify with this, that pain is not just a physical sensation. We mm-hmm. also experience suffering, pain, emotional pain, psychosocial pain, spiritual pain, existential pain, about our identity or crisis of trust or, you know, all these things that demoralization, often grounded in trauma. And so the requirement of chaplains to know about how to assess spiritual distress, spiritual pain, and how to bring what we call interventions, you know, to the visits we have so that we're actually helping that person to minimize that distress, to improve their resilience, their quality of life. That's a big outcomes that is making us an important part of the mainline team.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think A big part of it is of the change has been actually research.
Yeah.
The theme this year for Spiritual Care Week is advancing spiritual care through research. Just wanted to get that in. But really, it used to be chaplains would tell hospitals, "Oh, we're important to have because we provide presence." And
yeah.
The hospital administration, they began to say, "Well, you know, everyone we hire has to show evidence-based research for why we
right.
need to hire them and pay them." And so chaplains then, you know, began to research how the things they do make a difference in people getting better. In other words, they began to use an outcome-oriented approach and measure
mm-hmm.
the effectiveness
mm-hmm.
of the things they do and say to patients. And generally, they stopped assuming every patient wanted a prayer. And like I said, they began to focus more on listening. And instead of always assuming a patient visit was a good one, if the chaplain had a good feeling about it afterwards, now,
mm-hmm.
as professional chaplains who are part of the team, the medical team, we now do spiritual assessments. We assess the
mm-hmm.
spiritual things that are going on with the patient. We then do
mm-hmm.
interventions, which are things to address those spiritual needs. And then we observe for outcomes. With every visit that we make. So
mm-hmm.
chaplaincy's come a long way in 20 years, and part of that's due to just accepting research as a new way of knowing how to do things better.
Yeah, it's also really beneficial because like the other disciplines involved in doing any kind
mm-hmm.
of, at least clinical or therapeutic work, I'm not sure if that's quite the demand in the Department of Defense. You know, but anytime there's a clinical component involved, like the other disciplines, we need to start standardizing the language we use, standardizing the assessments we use. Sometimes we talk about a taxonomy, which is like a set of the different interventions we bring, the modalities of counseling or care. And these are all works in progress. We're coming online with the other disciplines, and that's why I say we're starting to look more like part of the behavioral health department, but with a very distinctive specialty, you know. And I'm all in favor of it. I like it because I think it's really important that we do show value for the people we're serving. And it's not just always a popularity contest because they liked you. It's because you actually
– right.
helped their healing or their level of suffering or their ability to cope or their quality of life in some way. That's good. That makes me feel good. And I'm glad that that can become measurable. Otherwise, administrators will continue to just think, we don't need to hire people and give clergy jobs doing this. We can just call
mm-hmm.
upon, you know, faith community leaders, which are wonderful, but it goes right back to that model that you then have to belong to a specific religious tradition and
right.
have somebody available who's willing to come and do more
right.
than just a ritual for you, who's willing to follow you and
right.
be part of your care team. And that's just not common.
Right.
Yeah,
and if
we
you,
also,
like you say, have a minority faith or no faith, then you're kind of out of luck.
You are out of luck. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the
ahead,
hospital
Karen.
or even hospice or other settings, you know, we're there for the staff as well as the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And a pastor or rabbi or priest of a particular faith isn't, you know, that's in a congregational type setting, isn't going to know how to support a hospital staff as well as a professional chaplain
Mm-mm.
would.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Shire mentioned just a while ago, COVID has changed the landscape of almost everything, including medical institutions and many medical positions. Tell me how COVID, and I actually attended a chaplaincy seminar on the burnout and the effects, but tell me how COVID has affected both of your work in this past year and a half.
You want to go ahead, Char?
Well, You know, the quality of appointment or visit I have is the same regardless of what medium I'm using. It has become that.
Mm-hmm.
For me in my setting, palliative, which is considered a specialty, and we can indulge more time. We can indulge more time mm-hmm. than in other settings. An initial consult might be 90 minutes. A standard follow-up will be about 55 minutes. You know, I might do six of those mm-hmm. in a day, right? And it used to always have to be face-to-face, either in the office, in the mm-hmm. clinic, you know, in the hospital setting, but somewhere face-to-face. And so COVID, you can't do that. So all of a sudden, you
right.
know, telemedicine, how the heck do you build rapport, keep that rapport going through very difficult, challenging situations and listen over the phone? And then innumerable platforms of video or virtual conferencing. Now we're doing a hybrid of remote visits and live in-person visits. And I was one of the first people to, like, scream and kicking about remote, going, there's no way. This work is touchy-feely. You can't do rituals over, you know. Well, hello, what Circle Sanctuary been going through last year? And you do miss the three-dimensional aspect of something, but I have become
right.
really darn good at counseling with FaceTime or with Zoom or with WebEx
yeah.
or with Teams. Or, I mean, I'm like, I can do this now. And patients and families have so much more choice about how they want
mm-hmm.
A visit from me delivered. And I like it now, actually.
Actually, a good example of a fabulous Zoom ritual was your ordination.
That was really
so
sweet. Who would have thunk?
It, mm. right? Who would have thought? I was, again, not that well-versed in Zoom, and that was wonderful and moving, and I felt the energy, and it was absolutely wonderful. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we have come a long way and developed new skill sets in this time of pandemic. What
yeah, and how we do interdisciplinary team meetings too, or how we are doing quarterly
yes.
educations. You know, saving a lot on carbon footprint, man. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, that's a side. Yeah, absolutely, I hadn't thought about that. Karn, what have you seen? Some changes you've seen since COVID has happened.
Oh, well, in the hospital setting, they at my particular hospital, they kept chaplains on board. Some hospitals just kicked them out when COVID came. So I was
really?
Very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and but the hospital I was at realized how integrated and integral chaplaincy is here. So I was able to see patients, but the families at the beginning were not allowed to see their patients, their loved ones
right.
at all who were in there.
I know.
And it was, oh, man, it's one of the hardest times
mm-hmm.
of my ministry was all those early months, the first 6 months
mm-hmm.
or so, when family members would call me and cry and beg and want to
mm-hmm.
see their loved ones. And I just, you know, I had to listen, give support, and tell them, you know, if it were up to me, I would let them in. But
mm-hmm.
we are in a particular circumstance. We are in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospital wants to protect people coming in. They want to protect the patients who have
mm-hmm.
who are very sick with COVID and have low immunity. And it's just, it was really terrible. Now we're at a point where we let in maybe one family member every 12 hours,
mm-hmm.
and they have to have the whole gown and the PPE mask,
mm-hmm.
N95 mask and the hat and the face shield and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And gloves, and I help them, the family, get ready to go in a lot of times. Sometimes the nurse does it if I'm not there, but and I go in with them to visit sometimes. And, you know, when their loved one has died of COVID, we can only allow two in, and that
mm-hmm.
is just, and we're
it's
going on
hard.
2 years
yeah.
now, and it
yeah.
is, It is still going on with this new Delta wave. It's been, we've had more deaths, and it's just been, it's been heartbreaking. But I feel like I've been making a difference in supporting these families through this time, and I'm going to continue to do that. And as long as this pandemic keeps going, it will end eventually.
Yeah. It's funny, the seminar attended talk about, an increase of not just patient, but nursing staff, but staff burnout and needing support and needing someone to talk to, and all the fear associated with taking care of patients who have COVID.
Yeah, our nursing administrators are talking about a revolving door of nurses that are getting other kinds of nursing jobs other than, you know, dealing with COVID patients. And they're doing, they said they're doing cartwheels out the door because they're getting paid more sometimes. And so it's been a real struggle for staff.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to say, Shar?
Well, no, I'm appreciating Kern and my husband, Andrew, you know, in the hospital dealing with that. And, and the other side of that, in more of the outpatient setting, we've seen a huge increase of domestic violence, of couples strain of actual abuse at home, of children or pets or elders or patients. We've seen just intense isolation, huge isolation on the part of non-ambulatory patients who are homebound. Huge caregiving crisis, huge caregiver burnout, which leads people to, you know, not necessarily make the best, most loving decisions because they're exhausted and stressed beyond belief. And this is where, again, in my setting, you know, things like advocacy come up in a really, really major way. APS, CPS, animal services, and the need to do de-escalation. We've also needed to do a lot, and I've been called a number of times to do critical incident debriefs where, you know, staff have an opportunity to really voice and express what they went through and maybe some risk analysis and, you know, learn from that, but to get some support around what was just, you know, a terrible situation to have to walk in on and things that are tangential to the illness. There, there is all the ripple effects of being in lockdown or being under so much stress that families are going through while caring for people who are seriously ill, and a dearth of services out there that can help. Right. So it's been a lot of collaboration between social workers and chaplains.
So Kern, I know that. You were hired specifically. I know most chaplains are backed by faith communities. Is that correct? Hospital chaplains?
Yeah, most of them are, yeah. Great majority are.
Yeah, and you actually were hired as a pagan chaplain. Tell us about that journey in Indiana,
well,
the Midwest.
Yeah.
Tell us about that journey.
Well, I my boss is a is Catholic, but he's not Roman Catholic. He's a different kind of Catholic. So he's sensitive to you know, other groups and different faiths and different communities, and when he hired me, he said to me, he says, "I don't care what you believe, just that you believe it." And that worked for me, and so I, you know, in Indiana, I can't, like, you know, wear my big ass pinnacle everywhere I go, and you know, it's not about me, it's about the patient and helping their needs.
Right.
So I, you know, I wouldn't say I'm totally on the down low, but really. I'm going to be there with patients and their families, not because I'm representing paganism particularly, although I am representing Circle as my denomination, but I'm not going there you know, as a pagan to help them. I'm going there as a chaplain, and and I'm there
because when I've worked
to,
with chaplains, I have not even known what their spirituality was. So
that's
which
often
is how
the case.
It should be.
That's often the case.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
If someone asks you, you know, but you don't walk in the door saying, I have dual standing
right.
and yada yada yada. You know, it's like what? It's about
but,
their
but
story,
I still
not
think
your
it's
story.
Great.
But
that
but
is
the reason
a
I
title
do it.
That you can have publicly, and especially since you belong, you're the first openly pagan chaplain that belongs to the Association of Professional Chaplains. That's very exciting.
Yeah,
that's where you can show off.
Yeah, definitely, and I've done some national seminars with the APC, the Association of Professional Chaplains, about paganism and teaching them about that. So I'm helping make a difference in that way. But you know, I don't do this for myself. I do it because I believe in the goddess and the God, and I believe in the interconnectedness
mm-hmm.
of all things. And I see the divine
mm-hmm.
in every patient and in
mm-hmm.
their family members and every staff. And, you know, I feel the connections between us, and I feel, you know, the energy moving through me, you know, through my
mm-hmm.
chakras and out through my hand when I'm praying with them, no matter what the words are. I know that spirit is making a difference. So, very much, you know, practicing my faith as I'm being a chaplain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well said.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. Regardless of what I vocalize to patients about myself, I am drawing upon my own earth-based faith constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Patients are so often ministering to me without knowing it, you know, I mean, because it's really an incredible privilege and honor to be invited into someone's life to companion them at one of the most vulnerable times of their life and to feel
mm-hmm.
that you can actually skillfully be of real assistance to them as well as a great form of service. And there are plenty of times that, you know, I'm coming back to my own spirituality in between constantly.
Well, Char, I really am impressed with what you've done with your personal altar building practice with patients.
Absolutely. Your workshop was great. That is so exciting.
Yeah, and you're incorporating you're incorporating your earth-based spirituality right there as you're helping patients build their own spiritual understanding and resources.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's fun in the Central Coast of California, I'm not going to lie. Because you got a lot of people who are like, they'll be like edging around you, and then they'll say, well, I don't know about chaplaincy because I'm Norse. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know, and so we'll start talking and they'll be, oh, you know all about that? Like, yeah, that's really cool. Do you work with that? You know, maybe we can have a family working with that. And they're like blown away that someone would know that, you know, Wicca they might expect or, you know, that you know shamanism, you know about that? You know? So it comes up a lot and it is fun when you can bring it forward because so many of our rites and rituals are very embodied and they get beyond the
mm-hmm.
words. Which is always powerful. It's powerful healing, powerful connecting. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
a lot of our patients
in
Indiana won't list themselves as Wicca or pagan because they here in Indiana they're afraid that nurses and other staff will treat them
mm-hmm.
differently and maybe give them a less quality care because of their faith. So,
mm-hmm.
it
happens,
you know, it's really hard for in this situation.
Yeah. I serve on the diversity council for Sutter Health and I keep reminding everybody that religious and spiritual diversity is a part of it. You know, that people really get marginalized and feel discriminated against and feel a different, sense of positive regard or quality of care. They can. And, that's why a lot of people have, or people will come in and try to proselytize them. And I don't mean chaplains. I mean staff, like a zealous zealot nurse or caregiver or something. And say, I don't want to talk about Buddha. I love the Lord Jesus Christ. That's it. You know, it's like, whoa, they'll really slap them down. So, you know, that's where, again, that advocacy within the institution, you know, protecting your patients becomes important.
Char, it's funny. I know that you started life out as an actress. How did you make your way to chaplaincy?
Well, I did not grow up and say, Mom, I want to be a chaplain.
A chaplain.
That was not, you know, now, yeah, a chaplain or clergy. Even when I became a minister, I had no intention of becoming a chaplain. I was very committed to being a community faith leader and was for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a community beast. I'm a community organizer, you know. But I'll tell you the through line was whether I was embodying story at Acting Out or in broadcast journalism, gathering stories and telling stories. And as a combat journalist, I was in the field with people on front lines telling their stories. And I came out of the service and proceeded to do a lot of work with other people who had PTSD using storytelling to gain agency for healing. Narrative therapy was coming out in a really big way. And at that time, I went to the VA with military sexual trauma and PTSD and sought help, and they wanted to give me Prozac and the 3 sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy. And then they kind of said, well, it's a man's world, ma'am. What did you expect? And I was like, I didn't expect that. And I walked away, and I never went back. And I went to, for the first time in my life, I know, right? That wouldn't fly today. I went, first time in my life, to, I was going to a Unitarian church because I grew up Unitarian. And I went to a female clergy spiritual director. And she helped me more than anything and anyone else did, aside from acting and martial arts. It's interesting now the Department of Veteran Affairs considers spiritual direction and martial arts two of the most effective PTSD complementary alternative treatments now.
Really?
So
that's interesting.
I just said at that time, I said, I got it. This is incredible. This is transformative for me. I want to explore being able somehow to do this for others. And that was in the mid-80s. They weren't really doing anything yet until the mid-90s when they first started ordaining women and commissioning them as chaplains in the Department of Defense. And when that happened, I went, oh, you know what? I want to go back in, not as a public affairs officer and do broadcast journalism. I want to go back in as a chaplain now. So that was my plan. And I went, you know, you had to go get an MDiv. I had to go get credentialed to do that, even though I already had a master's in communication and all that. I needed to go back. And I said, okay, I'm going to go back in the military. But, of course, you know, best laid plans. Met my husband, had the baby no one thought I would have. I was not going to graduate and go to Afghanistan, you know, or Iraq with a six-month-old. So that became a different diversion. But that's how I made my way. And I made my way from community faith leadership into chaplaincy when I started getting recruited because of the community work I was doing. And so I, since then, have helped to start like 4 different spiritual care service lines in different contexts. And that's been an incredible journey.
Wow.
That's
Karen,
fantastic.
What is your journey? How did you get to hospital chaplaincy?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I was doing congregational ministry in Christian tradition, and I had some difficult surgery that I went through, and when I came out of it, I began just questioning everything I had ever believed, you know. And so I do remember the first time that I was able to go outside in my recovery time after surgery,
mm-hmm.
And feeling the wind on my face and seeing and hearing the trees rustling, and
mm-hmm.
I just connected with nature, and that led me down a search for nature spirituality, and
mm-hmm.
led me to the goddess and meeting pagans in
mm-hmm.
In my community, and that's really, you know, I did a lot of reading, I did research on you know, on goddess imagery, and
mm-hmm.
and like I say, that's what led me to leave the church behind and try chaplaincy out. I did an internship and I loved it, and I began developing as a pagan, and it just, that's how it worked out. And then I went to Circle, went to Pagan Spirit Gathering one year, and got connected with Circle, and that's how I got, that's the short version of how I got to where I am today.
Mm.
So,
and there
are
a lot of chaplains.
And, go ahead.
There are a lot of, I'm sorry, there are a lot of chaplains, just like a lot of clergy, not all of whom are
right.
young. For a lot of folks, it's a second career or, you know, a mature career. Not
uh-huh.
necessarily, though. But it's not at all surprising to see chaplains who are still working who are in their 70s.
Oh, mm. wow. That's really, I mean, it has come a long way. That's really, really excited. How has chaplaincy, you think, been accepted by the pagan community as a whole? I know a lot of practitioners are comfortable with the word priest or priestess, not necessarily as comfortable with the word clergy or chaplain.
My
you think
experience
it's changing?
I don't know. Well, I think paganism is always changing, which
mm-hmm.
is a good thing. We're always adapting. We're open to new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike other religions that are pretty much dead in their mindset about and wanting to keep tradition and
mm-hmm.
and confusing tradition with spirituality and stuff, I think it's very, very positive. But I'll have to say, some folks just don't understand why I would want to be a chaplain and
mm-hmm.
be a pagan, because, you know, for them, maybe paganism is doing your own thing and exploring your own spirituality, and there's a lot of truth to that. But also, like I said earlier, it's about recognizing the interconnectedness between us all and wanting to make a difference and reach out and revive that sense of how we are all connected. I think Char does this really well with her ecology ministry too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I've observed, and I know Kern and I both have been involved with Selena and Dennis, and thank to Tiffany as well,
mm-hmm.
and sort of updating some of the procedures and protocols for the chaplaincy program with Circle. And I really want to just take a moment to commend Circle Sanctuary for being one of the only non-Judeo-Christian traditions I know of, the only earth-based tradition I know of, that has a process for really ordaining clergy and then for
Absolutely.
Endorsing clergy who are seeking professional chaplaincy jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And who are registered with the Association of Professional Chaplains, registered with the Spiritual Care Association, with whom I'm board certified, registered with the Department of Defense. I mean, this is phenomenal, because you've got to be recognized as a faith tradition by those credentialing bodies in order to get jobs, you know, and be paid to be a professional chaplain. And Circle has done that and continues to do that and provide really careful guidance, vocational guidance for candidates seeking that. And that's the real issue for me. As I went searching for a lot of years, Covenant of the Goddess, OVAD, you know, all these different groups. I was at Pantheacon every year for 10 years and all the suites trying to find, do you guys have a way of transferring clergy orders for someone who's ordained? Do you have an ordaining and endorsement body? Do you understand these? And no, there's no space in the institution for people who might be professional chaplains. So Circle's really done that. And that's huge. And I'm hoping that will help to raise the bar on some of those processes for other pagan groups, too.
Yeah, there's been others that have tried to do that, but I think Circle has been the most successful at it.
And you've been a big part of that, Kern.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I've done my small part, and I'm glad to be a part of what Circle's been doing. You know, I really do think Circle is going to be the one that will have the first military pagan chaplain. I don't know that. I pray that happens.
Absolutely.
You know, whatever the gods will. But I do believe it's going to happen one of these days.
Yeah, who can command, be part of the command structure and not get persecuted by fellow commanders? Wouldn't that be swell?
I know Circles came very
speaking from experience.
Yeah, that's the one frontier they've not been able to reach yet.
Mm. Yeah, because you can have a DOD-wide, you know, policy, but how it's enacted in the field can so often be left up to a commander's ego. Anyway, it's all kinds of fun new ground to break, but advocacy and institutions, Lady Liberty and that sort of thing, you know, it's so important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So where do you see chaplaincy next?
That's a good question. I think in general, you know, once we get through this crisis of COVID, you know, things are going to change. Things are changing now in the healthcare industry. But afterwards, things are going to change. So professional chaplains are going to have to learn to adapt and work within those structures. I think because chaplains have made a difference now in this COVID pandemic, that they will be part of what comes afterwards.
Yeah, and there are new frontiers opening, meaning new industry sectors that are starting to explore having part-time or full-time duly trained and credentialed clergy on staff to serve the clients that in their industry sector. And that even includes some things like casinos, of all things, and cruise ships. And large corporations are starting to have, like, corporate chaplains or
really,
you know, so other as more fields find value in having a duly ordained, endorsed, trained, and credentialed professional chaplain on board for their setting, we'll be looking at different standards, different competencies that are required for those. But it continues to build legitimacy for clergy for spiritual care being in leadership in these institutions, and I think that continues to sort of change and broaden.
Yeah, and I can see as chaplains continue to incorporate pagans and people of other faiths, that there will be more diversity among chaplaincy, which will include paganism. And I think for people that are thinking about chaplaincy, you know, they should know that there are opportunities ahead in the future. And, you know, if you're interested in becoming a professional chaplain, you can contact a nearby hospital and ask if they have clinical pastoral education, CPE, and if you could try a unit and see how you like chaplaincy. And it may be just what you're called to do.
And you're,
there's
your
there's
own
you need to have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's part of it is pursuing those degrees and getting that type of training. But Circle is going to be here to give encouragement to folks as they pursue it.
Yeah, your own chaplaincy committee, and Kern and I are on that. We are the endorsers are Selena and Dennis. But we're on the committee. We're here to advise, help educate, you know, offer vocational counseling. So don't hesitate to reach out. You know, we're here to help. We really are, and we'll, you know, it's our responsibility to bring you accurate information and good vocational counseling, so you don't waste years and lots of money. You know, that doesn't help you achieve your goals. I say that because I've seen it all the time, and we don't want that to happen to any of our pagans.
Oh no.
Do you see more interest with pagans interested in ministry and chaplaincy?
Well, we get emails quite often from people seeking information about it. So I think, and that has increased in the last few years. Mm-hmm. So I think there is an uptick in the interest in chaplaincy among pagans.
Which is awesome. So many more employers now don't even ask what your religious affiliation is. You know, a lot of them, they might find it a matter of interest, but that used to be a big thing. Like, hey, we need to have Christian Protestant chaplains. So what's your denomination? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there are certainly philanthropy departments where donors do care about that, you know, but the employers themselves are like, hey, we need someone to be interreligious, interfaith. We need you to be neutral. We need you to be really skilled. What we care about is, do you have the credentials that makes you a part of the clinical team, you know? And that's a different set. So anyway, Kurt and I had fun putting together that class for MTP, and we're happy to be on hand for anyone who's got any questions about that, and we're constantly learning as we go. We never stop learning, right, Kern?
Absolutely. And it can be a difficult and long road, but I'll tell you, it is a very rewarding one and very fulfilling to do chaplaincy. At least it has been for me.
Yeah, I don't regret
it. I can't believe
it. One bit.
I cannot believe an hour is almost up. You all have been fabulous. And happy clergy appreciation and happy spiritual care week to both
thank
of you.
You.
And thank you
thank
very
you.
Much for your service.
Appreciation
you.
For you, Deb. Thank you, Kern.
We love
bye,
you,
bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, besides Kern and Shar, I'd like to thank Janet and David, our sound engineers, for their technical expertise.
Yay.
And I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, October 19th. We'll be chatting and listening to the music of Alexander James Adams, so please come back. I look forward to seeing you all again. We're now going to transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Blessed be.
Keep the need for shall see.
and thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.